WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In an era where thin is beautiful and the waif look is in, my guest has created a heroine who is big and mean-looking. The character's goal in life isn't to trim down. It's to become the women's heavyweight wrestling champion of England. The character is Eva Wiley, known in the ring as the London Assassin. Her creator is my guest Liza Cody. Cody is a British writer whose earlier series of Anna Lee mysteries is being made into a British TV series. Her new book, Bucket Nut, is the first Eva Wiley mystery. When Wiley isn't wrestling, she works as a security guard for a London junkyard where she lives in a beat-up trailer. She also makes deliveries for a local racketeer. One of those deliveries turns out to be a parcel bomb, which is meant to blow up a nightclub and blow Eva away. But Eva survives the explosion. After lying unconscious for several hours in a ditch, she comes to and emerges, dazed, her clothes in tatters. And that's where this reading picks up.
I'm used to people staring at me, but usually they stare because I'm big and strong and mean and tough. I'm not used to being stared at when I'm weak and feeble and not dressed properly. It wasn't nice. I felt sort of naked. Well, if you must know, I was sort of naked. So I hung onto my rags and limped as fast as I could. It all goes to show basic strength and fitness do count for something. Getting home without falling down or going to sleep every 10 steps of the way was something a feebler person just couldn't have done. But I did it, so stick that up your nose and blow it out your ear. I bet you've been having a bit of a giggle at me all this time, a big woman making herself bigger and tougher. Well, let me tell you, I'm never sick. I don't get headaches. And when I get hurt, I can tough it out. What can you say about yourself? Eh? Go on. How would you manage if you'd been blown halfway across a road and a door on top of you? I know you think I'm stupid. Don't try and tell me different, 'cause I know, see? And maybe I'd done a stupid thing. All right. But even clever people can do stupid things. You don't have to be all round stupid to be conned. Clever people can be fooled too. Hasn't anyone ever taken you for a sucker? Well, okay. I'm not judging you, so don't you sit there and judge me.
Liza, thanks for reading that. Would you describe Eva physically?
Eva is big, bad, and ugly. I'd say she's probably 6 foot or over, and she's broad to match, but she's very well muscled. She's worked at that. She's based, actually, on a woman I saw in the Charing Cross Road. Someone who was just coming down towards me. And she was enormous, and I did a double take on her, as was everybody else in the road, because she was wearing leathers. She was the kind of shape and size of a woman who usually wears, well, a muumuu or something and stays at home and hides. But she was striding up the Charing Cross Road with a sort of F-U expression on her face, and she didn't care, and everybody was looking at her. And that was basically my introduction to Eva, was thinking, what is it like to look like that? In other words, not to look ordinary.
What did you make of this woman who was assertive about how big she was instead of covering it with a muumuu?
Well, I guess I admired her. The next stage was that I met a woman called Klondike Kate, who is also extremely ugly, and she's a wrestler. And this woman, in fact, is more fat than tall. She's the kind of shape where, as I say, most women would not go on a beach. But she gets up and she gets in the ring wearing a leotard. So she's like a barrel in Lycra. And she gets out under the lights and she is herself. And she has to, of course, she has to be a villain because ugly people have to be villains. But the point is, she doesn't hide, and I admire that.
How did you meet her?
Well, I started going to some wrestling matches. Basically, when I used to go to wrestling, I used to know someone when I was at art school who was the Canadian heavyweight champion. And in those days, there weren't any women wrestlers. And then I heard by chance that there were some women wrestlers in England. So I just went to have a look, and that's when I saw this woman and went to talk to her afterwards. And it occurred to me that she had really found her niche in life. If you don't want to hide, if you don't want to be invisible, you have to go out there and allow yourself to be hated. And I think it's very rare because women can't stand being hated. Our whole conditioning is towards being approved of, is towards being pretty and approved of. And it seemed to me that I had just seen two people who were doing absolutely the opposite. And it made me kind of reevaluate what sort of went into our conditioning and why.
So you drew on both the wrestler Klondike Kate and on this very large woman who you saw walking down Charing Cross
yes.
Road to create your character.
That's right, yes.
What else did you have to know about your character in order to render her in a believable way?
Well, I think a lot of things start from appearance. They do for me. They appearances go a lot of the way towards how I judge and evaluate a person. And I was thinking about someone who is, well, not to put too fine a point on it, ugly. And I was reckoning that they would be treated badly, and they would have been treated badly since they were children. And some people, when the world treats them badly, they sort of curl up and die. And some people, when the world treats them badly, they treat the world badly back themselves. They want to hit back. They just get bloody angry, if you'll excuse the expression. And it was the bloody angry that I wanted to write about.
So tell us about the persona that you gave Eva. Her name in the ring is the London Assassin.
That's right. Well, she has to be the villain. Nature didn't give her much choice. She has to be the villain because she's ugly. That's the way that society casts ugly women. They become witches and so on. So she cannot, in a way, ever be what they call in wrestling blue eyes. And blue eyes are the guys or the women in the white hats. She has to be a villain. And therefore, she has to judge her success by, well, basically, how many people spit at her. If a lot of people boo at her and spit at her and throw things, then she knows she's doing very well. It always struck me as very ironic, that. I like that idea.
Eva is not an educated person. Was there anything in your life that helped you understand a character that grew up without an education, grew up partly in foster homes?
Well, yes. In a way, I feel I'm pretty badly educated myself. I left school when I was 16. I'm a dyslexic, which means that everyone thought I was incredibly thick. And that gets pretty annoying after a while when you're a kid. And it tends to lead to behavior problems. And then, of course, coming from England, I was sent away to boarding school when I was very young. And so in that respect, even though my parents paid through the nose for it, it's institutional life, and you are at the mercy of strangers. They do say that the British upper and middle classes are very well fitted for prison life. that we get on better in institutions than we do in luxurious hotels. We know how to cope. So in a very strange kind of way, there are a lot of things in common between Eva and me.
So were you assumed to be stupid because you were dyslexic?
Yeah.
Were you put in special classes?
What's known as the D stream. All the bright kids go in the A and so on, A, B, C, and D. By the time you're D, it's more or less remedial. And it's a horrible place to be if you sort of feel you understand things. And I always felt I understood things. It's just I couldn't write them down. And homework would take me sort of about 8 times as long as everybody else. And I would never get the spelling right. So in the end, I kind of give up doing it. And when you give up doing it, then you start getting into a spiral of punishment and so on. And so I left school without any qualifications, and actually went to art school on the theory that that was a wonderful place for people who couldn't spell.
So how was your dyslexia diagnosed?
Well, it wasn't. I was 22 years old and I was looking in a newspaper and there was an article about dyslexia and they actually reproduced some writing by dyslexic children. And I looked at this writing and I thought, blimey, that's me.
What did you recognise in it?
The mirror writing. The fact that, you know, P's and B's, the ups and downs, things switched over. And I just looked at this and I said, that is me. That's the way I was at that age and so on.
And then what happened?
Well, actually, funnily enough, I felt a lot better then. I thought, oh, good, what did I think? You're handicapped, you're not thick.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, that was a bit of a comfort.
It meant that you weren't stupid, it's just that you had this problem reading and writing.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously you write now, and I have to assume that you read a lot too. Maybe that's a false assumption, but what led you in that direction after having this obstacle to reading and writing?
Well, I've always read a lot, but just slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I never even wrote shopping lists. I mean, I was totally allergic to the pencil and pen. But I was a reasonably good storyteller. And it was my old man who decided that I should write a book because we'd been away on holiday in the south of France. We'd had a villa which had been shared by several families. And all the kids were sort of around 10 years old. And it became my job to tell them the story every night, the one which would get them to bed before the adults. And I kept one story going for 2 or 3 weeks. And so he thought that I could write a child's book, whereas, of course, I wasn't in the least bit interested at writing for children. I mean, I like telling children stories because basically when you get stuck, you ask the little suckers what happens next, and they tell you, quite unlike what happens in the adult world. So that's how it started.
Do you have any problems from the dyslexia when you write?
Well, when I'm very tired, I even start at the wrong end of the page. One piece of comfort for dyslexics anywhere is the fact that if you relax and if you stick at it, you get better. I'm not saying that I'm ever going to be Einstein in the writing department, but I certainly make fewer mistakes than I used to. And the quality of just relaxing and sort of getting your head into it, it seems to come naturally. But otherwise, I just write and I make all the mistakes that I make. And then I go through it with a dictionary. I write in pencil. And then the person who types for me is a very good speller, or used to be. And that's another thing. A dyslexic can completely discombobulate somebody who thinks they can spell. Because you don't spell one word wrong the same way twice. In fact, if there are 5 different ways to spell a word, you will find all 5. And for someone who really can spell well, they find themselves questioning everything. And so I'm not doing my typists any favor at all.
Well, what about word check? Do you ever use that? Spell check?
Well, I don't use a word processor.
That's part of computer programs.
Yes.
They just check the spelling for you.
Yeah. Well, they can, but then then again, I use a lot of slang, which mm-hmm. always comes up as being a mistake on spell check. And another thing, being in England, almost all the computer programs for spelling are American spelling, which is interesting.
Oh, I see. So color would be C-O-L-R instead of C-O-L-O-U-R. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm asking the wrong person.
Long pause, yes.
Well, you know, you mentioned the slang that you use. I have to confess, I didn't understand some of it. There's a sentence, "She looked like a film star and talked poncy, but I had the dosh." You want to interpret that for me?
She looked like Michelle Pfeiffer. She talked like Nancy Reagan. But I was Donald Trump.
Oh, that's great. Now, is nut bucket a slang term?
Bucket nut.
Bucket nut, I'm sorry.
Yes, well, no.
No, I'm that's your job, right?
You see what I mean? Well, bucket nut really simply means that she's so ugly she's got her face like a bucket. And it was, in fact, a term I overheard someone shouting at Klondike Kate, one of my inspirations for this character. He came rushing up to the front. He was a little old man, you know, who looked as if he wouldn't say boo to a goose. And he spittle was flying in every direction. And he couldn't think of anything bad enough to say. He looked like the kind of guy who'd never sworn in his life, especially not at a woman. And he says, you bucket nut. And he comes out with it as if it's the worst swear word in the world. But all it means is that she's got a face like a bucket.
Had you ever heard that before?
No, I hadn't heard that one before.
My guest is British mystery writer Liza Cody. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Liza Cody, author of the new mystery novel Bucket Nut. You've already written a series of detective novels with another character, not with the wrestler who we've been talking about, but with a character named Anna Lee. So I assume that was the first stuff that you started writing when you decided to write.
Yes.
What led you to that area of detective fiction?
Well, I think basically because I just wanted to write stories about things happening, the kind of things that happen to the people I know. I didn't feel that I could write so-called proper literature because I felt that one needed a quality of sort of philosophizing or speculating, which I just don't have. I didn't feel I had anything very important to say, but I felt that I knew a lot of good stories and that I was a fairly good observer of human nature. And I also wanted to have a form which would make me stick to the point, stick to a story and not go off hog wild in any particular direction.
How does your first detective, Anna Lee, compare to your new character, Eva?
Well, Anna, funnily enough, she's a little bit institutionalized as well because she used to be on the police force and has been brought up in a man's world and is therefore has the strengths and weaknesses of any woman who is formed in a man's world. But I think one of her most overriding characteristics is that she tries incredibly hard always to be decent and to do the decent thing. Whereas Eva tries awfully hard to be as indecent and as get away with as much as she possibly can.
When you decided that your character Anna Lee was perhaps too decent, had something changed in your life that made you want to create somebody who was less decent?
Yes, I think this is the slow burning and always developing sense of myself and of women in society. And I think maybe in my own life I was beginning to be just a little bit restricted and tired of always having to do the right thing, of always having the sort of burden of morality on me. And people always asking, is this a role model, and so on, as if you can't write about people in their own right, that everything you do has to be a role model for other women. And a role model always has to be the decent, the patient, the kind, the one that nurtures and cares and looks after children. Well, we've got so many sides to our nature. I think that it's time for us to sort of be able to cope with, for instance, anger and rage. I know I have quite a large bank of anger in me at various times, and it seemed, you know, kind of liberating time to let it rip a little bit, and so I did.
So have you found yourself becoming more assertive now that you're writing about such an aggressive character?
Oh, no, I'm a complete wimp. I always have been, always will be. I think women get, I think I've got a bit more salty with age, to tell you the truth. And I'm much less worried about people disapproving of me. Yes, I possibly do say what I think and what I feel a lot more than I used to. But not now.
Not now?
Of course not now.
Not right this minute, you mean?
No.
Because it's too public?
Because it's too public, and because when I'm in a really public situation, I find myself absolutely terrified that everyone's going to hate me. And so in that respect, I'm completely unlike Eva, who doesn't give a toss.
Right. Well, I really enjoyed talking with you, and I thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it was great talking to you.
Liza Cody's new novel is Bucket Nut. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.